Hi there, and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years, and I'm fascinated by how companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them, and the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I'll be talking to a whole host of people with different stories, backgrounds, and journeys, learning about their business and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. For those that are listening, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe if you enjoy what you hear. So without further ado to today's episode. Hailing from Barna in County Galway, Lorraine Heskin studied in University of Limerick before heading off to New York for 4 years, working in a diverse range of food businesses. On returning to Dublin in 2006, she founded Gourmet Food Parlour, opening its first 25-seater cafe in Dunleary. Since then, it has evolved to become Dublin's most trusted restaurant group with 12 locations across Dublin, Meath and Galway, including a state-of-the-art catering kitchen in Santry. In 2023, they opened 3 unique dining concepts in the iconic Arnott's Dublin department store and now have a 4th there, as well as 2 in Brown Thomas, and employ 320 people in total. As CEO, Lorraine's hands-on approach to running the business is a driving force behind the company. Her dedication, determination and hard work filters down through the company. She was an EY Entrepreneur of the Year finalist in 2023 and recently won CEO of the Year at the inaugural Business Post Leadership and Excellence Awards. She has her own consultancy business established where she works with female entrepreneurs on their business journey, guiding and encouraging them to grow and scale. Lorraine, you are very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you. Right. Where'll I start? Okay, easy one to start with. What made you start the Gourmet Food Parlour in the first place?
So I was living in America, working in the food industry over there, which I got into completely by chance. And I just loved everything about the whole style of food and eating in the States, the positivity around it and the enormity of it all. And I took a lot of ideas when I was living there. And then I moved back home after living there for about 4 or 5 years. And I went to work for Jacob Fruitfield Food Group. Jacob's had just bought Fruitfield. Michael Carey was involved in that whole transaction. Phenomenal time. Really lucky to be there, but you're a small fish in a big pond. And whilst I loved my job there, I was export sales and marketing manager, I always knew there was a kind of a something in me where I wanted to set up my own business. So I took a lot of the concepts and the ideas that I had kind of founded and created and sought when I was in America. And that's where the whole concept for Gourmet Food Parlour came from. A very short synopsis of a long story.
Well, we like long stories here too. So, you then, I suppose, consider yourself, if you will, an on purpose rather than an accidental entrepreneur. You always knew you wanted to set something up, did you?
I think I did. Like, eventually, I think when I got into my 20s, I came out of college, you know, when you started to mature a little bit. I didn't know from when I was very young or anything like that. I think I probably spent a lot of my life wondering what did I want to do. And that was from even when I went to college. I remember there was a module that I studied in business when I did my arts degree. And I knew, I just fell in love with it. There was something that I found, I actually feel like I'm really good at that. So that kind of, I suppose, transpired into me wanting to have my own business. My uncle had his own business. He was very successful in the UK. And when you're surrounded by people who inspire you like that, I think that's really important. My dad was a guard, retired guard. Then he set up his own business as well. So that kind of spirit is in the family a little bit. But then I suppose you always have your own spirit as well. And I knew if I didn't do it then, I'd never do it. I wasn't married. I didn't have any kids, you know. I was full of energy, full of enthusiasm and full of hope. And I decided if I don't do this now, I'm never going to do it. So now's the chance. But of course, it was 2006, Aidan, and the recession was about to come in. But just before that happened, it was still in the Celtic Tiger. Yeah. So even trying to find, like I decided, okay, well, look, we'll go, I'll have a look for a unit. You know, there was no units available. Yeah. And it was all, do you want to pay key money? And what key money do you have before you even get in to negotiate a lease? And I remember saying to myself at the time, I will absolutely not pay a cent of key money. I am not paying anything because any money that I had, which was minimal, was going to go into the fit out of the business. Yeah.
And even then at that next stage, you know, I always think to people when you talk to entrepreneurs and you're starting a business, there's so many hats an entrepreneur has to wear starting a business, right? And, you know, it is a mistake that they think they need to be great at all of them for the business to succeed. And the reality is you can't be like that. Like when you think back, you know, you might have said to yourself, look, I'm really good at the food side of it. I'm good at marketing, but bloody hell, accounts I couldn't be bothered with or whatnot. You know, what was the experience for you as you were setting up that the first one?
Well, that was precisely it. I was really good at the sales and marketing side, but I wasn't financially driven or experienced at all. It wasn't what I studied. It wasn't what I naturally kind of progressed towards. So at the very beginning, I loved being in front of house, being in front of the customers, making sure they were happy, making sure everything looked fabulous. The cafe was fabulous and the food, etc. But it was, the challenge was everything else, as you say, all those hats that you have to wear. You know, you have to be the receptionist, the HR manager, the recruitment manager, you have to process the wages, head of IT, yeah, head of cleaning the toilets. You know, it was everything encompassing. And that is very overwhelming. And there's no course, there's nobody, there's absolutely nothing there to prepare you for the shoes that you're going to walk in when you open your business. But is it the best experience that you can ever get? Yes, because you quickly have to realize, or else your business is going to close as soon as it opened, what you need to do and who you need to surround yourself with as well, because you can't be everything to everybody. So I always say you have to surround yourself with good people. And in Gourmet Food Parlour, over the last 19 years, we have spent that time building strong pillars within the organisation. And for the hospitality industry, I am so proud of the pillars that we've built and the structure that we have in the business. When I look back to the 6 staff that I had on the 28th of July 2006 to the 320 we have now, we were as blessed then that day as we are now with enthusiastic and hardworking people. But that is down to the people and down to the culture that they create within the environment of the business too.
But do you think, when you think back, you know, is the idea that the naivety you had at that stage is a kind of a blessing? Because if you knew today, back then, if you knew what you know today, you probably wouldn't have done
what I'd never have done it. Like, never. I remember we were 10 years in business and we had a party and I gave a speech and I said, you know, if I knew today what I did, if I'd known today what I know then, yeah, I wouldn't have done it. Yeah. I absolutely would not have, because it was hard.
Youth and
it's hard.
It's a great, yeah, a great blessing.
And enthusiasm, yeah, and energy that, yeah, I no longer have. But anyway, and naivety is so true. But also it's hope as well, isn't it? You know, you're so hopeful for your business. You're so proud of what you've put together and what you've created. And you want everybody else to love it as much as you do. Yeah. And, you know, when people do start to do that, Aidan, there's something very special about that. And I felt from the day that we opened back in July 06, there was a queue down the road and I thought, oh my goodness, this is amazing. We've created something so special. And like, it was off a side street in Dunleary. It was no special location. It was a very old building. There was a lot of work put into it and, you know, and it was a shoestring budget, but there was heart, yeah, and hope and a want to create a brand. You know, I remember before ever opening, I wanted to create a brand that was grass grown, you know, grassroots Irish grown, an Irish brand that people would be proud of. And that is still very much the ethos to this day.
And you think, you know, when you come to restaurants, people always, I'm always interested about this, like, the people automatically think restaurants go, oh, the food. But actually it isn't. The food's only one part. It's the experience that ultimately people, you know, the food can be okay and the experience brilliant and people will think they've had the best time of their lives.
Yeah.
The food can be amazing and the experience is only so, and people wouldn't rate it as a,
yeah,
restaurant.
Wouldn't go back again. Yeah. You know, it's all, there's a lot to consider when you walk in the door. Yeah. And for our restaurants, I want someone to come in and I really, the first thing is that the atmosphere is fabulous, that they get a warm welcome, that the staff, you know, are welcoming them into somewhere because they're choosing to walk in the door of our restaurants. Mm. How lucky are we that people have made that choice? Mm. And I think that sometimes is so misinterpreted in the restaurant business because we do rely on people to make that choice every single day. So they're coming in. So they deserve that experience. They deserve that wonderful experience. You know, and notwithstanding the knowledge, what kind of knowledge does your staff have? What kind of interactions do they have? Do they know that maybe you look like you don't really want to have a conversation and they leave you be? Yeah. Or do they look like, oh my goodness, they're up for a little chat now. We'll have a talk about things, you know. So it's recognizing those qualities in people. Are you a people's person? And if you're not, you're in the wrong industry anyway, you know. And it's also, it's a sales job, you know. It's about upselling. What kind of spend per head can we get per customer, you know, that makes them comfortable, that makes them feel like they got value for their experience, their customer service experience, and also value for what's on the menu and how we market ourselves as a business and a brand. Does the customer feel
Right.
Like they got value out of that at the end of the day and the end of the experience to thank you so much and hope to see you again, you know.
Talking about entrepreneurship in general, right? And I know through the consultancy business, you're probably talking to a lot of startups and things like that, right? Do you think entrepreneurship is an art, a science, or a philosophy?
I think entrepreneurship is a very personal thing.
Right.
And I think entrepreneurship, the definition of it, is very personal to everybody. Entrepreneurs are very different types of people because I do think they think differently. They're a little bit crazy. Yeah. I think you have to be a little bit crazy.
You're not the first person to say that.
I can imagine. I think you kind of have to be.
What is entrepreneurship? And they said it's an illness.
I think it's a way of life. I think it's a way of life. But I love it. Yeah. Like, I feel like I found my destiny in life, you know. So for me, it was a way of life for me. And I'm so proud to be in a position to be able to be an entrepreneur, a female, very proud female entrepreneur. And also to be able to provide a business that people are proud to come and work for. And that they're proud to come and eat in our restaurants and order our catering or to work with us in any way, shape or form. I'm really proud of that. And I have so many pinch me moments around that still. Coming up to 20 years, touch wood, in business next year. It's one of my proudest achievements.
Do you think entrepreneurship is gender dependent? I always wonder about this. Do you think men or women make better entrepreneurs?
Oh, I would never compare because I think men and women are so different for so many obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But I think that female entrepreneurs have a lot of strong emotional intelligence and they can make for strong entrepreneurs because of that.
Yeah.
And I think that men can be very focused and very formidable in their path as an entrepreneur. I think there's a lot of strong qualities around that as well. Not to say that both don't have either, by the way, but they're just qualities that I just see in people. I think as an entrepreneur in general, whether you're male or female, to have a strong emotional intelligence is essential.
Yeah.
I think it's essential. And if it doesn't come naturally to you, I think you need to go and find it.
Yeah. As you said, you're coming up on the 20 years now. So how do you feel about what you've already done in the company?
I probably have a different answer to that every month of the year. But at the moment, and I just spoke to our managing director about a few things in the way in to see you today. And I feel really strong about where our business is right now, about where how we've kind of formulated the business in the last even 2 to 3 years. You know, it's been tough since 2020 to talk about COVID, to talk about, you know, the cost of living crisis and all the increased bills. And you can talk about that till the cows come home. But we're very much a business that puts our best foot forward and we put plans in place to make sure that we continue to grow as a business. That's really important. I feel very proud. I talked about those pillars and I probably will an awful lot, Aidan. It's very important to me that when I set out to build Gourmet Food Parlour and grow it from not just 2006, but 2008, where we opened our second and then we opened our catering division and all of that. It was very important to me that I created a structure within the business that was going to grow with us as we continued to open units. And I didn't want to be like a business that just opened a unit. Oh, yeah, we're going to open 15 and let's just put out a press release. That just wasn't it for me. It was something better than that. It was something different to that. It was about creating, I suppose, career paths for people in the industry who would never have had career paths before. And I'll give you some examples because it's really important to me. Like, I'll talk about one of my executive chefs. You know, he came in as a chef, a commis chef, chef de partie. He's now the executive chef for the business, overseeing absolutely everything, which is an absolutely huge job. Robbie, his sidekick, came in as a kitchen porter, I think 16 years ago. And I remember I met him in the kitchen and he was so nervous. He was shaking, taking the dishes out of the dishwasher. And I remember saying to him, I remember looking at all these wonderful people who wanted to work so hard. I'm thinking, we need to create these paths for people. My finance manager came in as a deli assistant. I mean, the list goes on. I mean, I'm so proud of everyone and their want for being ambitious and their want for driving through with their career. And that's down to them for wanting it. And we just created that path for them. I'm so proud of that. I'm so proud of the structure that we've created in the business, not just from HR to a finance team, to operations, to sales, to marketing, to PR, to our maintenance team, to everybody who is involved in every single aspect of the day-to-day running of Gourmet Food Parlour. And it's a family. It it is an absolute business family who have a very serious goal to achieve. But what we do every day and what we're striving to do, like even the systems that we want to bring in to better ourselves, you know, I want to have like a NASDAQ screen in our head office of showing me like, where are we at in our sales today? You know, how is the weather affecting our sales? And what's, and we analyze that anyway, but it's very person dependent. We need better systems, and our senior team are working on an incredible project which is going to really help us to transform and really take the business to the next level. So I'm so excited. I hope that comes across, because I am so excited. I'm so proud to do what I do, and I'm excited for the future, despite the fact that it is still incredibly challenging to run a business in hospitality. Not just run a business in general, I know that, but I can only speak for hospitality. That's the industry that we're in.
Yeah, I think I already know the answers, and I ask it all the time. You know, you're done by the people that are in the team and things like that. So, you know, in terms of your HR strategy, is it hire talent or develop from within?
Oh, it's both.
Is it?
I love, number one, develop from within.
Yeah.
But number two, hire talent as well. Like we created a new role in the business recently. So to bring somebody in to just look after events in the restaurants. So, you know, you can be open for 7 days a week, but you could close three or four nights a week because the demand is just not there. You know, people's eating habits, people's spending habits are changing, and we need to adapt to that. So we thought, okay, there's a niche, there's a space there for an event manager to come in. So we've hired a great guy, Philip. He's after coming in and he's really settling into the role. But we couldn't actually promote somebody internally for that role.
It was a skill set that wasn't necessarily there.
Correct. Yeah. And that's okay. Yeah. Because I love new blood, fresh blood coming in. I think that's so important. But I tell you, there's people on our team now, Aidan, who are with us 15, 16, 17 years, and they're as passionate now as they were, even more so than when they started. And isn't that incredible to be able to say that? And so I suppose that's what I'm saying is the answer is both, because I really, really believe in bringing people with you on a journey if they want to. Not everybody wants a promotion. No. I know people who work for me and I'd love to promote them. And they're like, no, thanks, Lorraine. Yeah. I don't want it. Yeah. I'm so happy where I am.
Yeah.
And I respect that. Yeah. But I watch people all the time. He's very good. She's very good. Are you good? What are you thinking? Where do you want to go? Where do you want to be? And I'll make sure they get there. Yeah. Make sure they get there.
Do you think you celebrate your successes enough?
No.
Everyone I ask is pretty much the same question. They're too busy looking forward. They say, I should really just step back and look. And particularly, you know, it might be, oh, well, I'll do it after 10 years or I'll do it after 20 years. Yeah. But you're kind of looking at the 20 years. Yeah, that's been great. Put your eyes on going forward.
100%. I think there's, as an entrepreneur, you're nearly just running, you're racing towards the next thing because you're afraid to stop in case it feels like it's all a dream. But I have to say, you know, there's one thing that I don't believe any entrepreneur should have, and that's ego. I feel like you should be an extremely grounded person. I don't believe anyone is any different to anybody else. And I believe I wouldn't celebrate, it's not a personal celebration, but it would be a celebration, obviously, of the business and the team and the people. Because they're the reason why we're so successful and why we've built this incredible brand, as well as obviously equally our customers too, you know. But no is the answer to that. And
So there's a little.
There's a bit of work. Yeah, exactly.
What were the truly hard points during the journey over the last 20 years?
Definitely the recession in 2008 it started to hit us in 2009. And I just started the business, but had borrowed and, you know, expanded and had a lot invested in it. And we were just a daytime business and I could see sales reducing dramatically. You know, that extra expenditure that everybody had and the two cars and all the holidays that everyone was going on back then, it really came to a grinding halt and it was quite frightening. And there was a lot, I had to dig very, very deep. But what I did do though, which was brilliant, was I worked with a consultant to help me to look at the business from the outside in and to figure out where I wanted to take it to the next stage, because I knew it wasn't going to survive the way it was. So like a daytime cafe back in, you know, the noughties just wasn't going to do it, just wasn't going to cut the mustard. So when you're paying bills 24/7 and, you know, you might be only open 5 or 6 days a week till 4 or 5, you know, you extend your opening hours. That's when we became a restaurant group. And I did borrow money from the bank and I invested in the brand. I rebranded and I invested in the units themselves. And I started to open at nighttime, bring in a little bit of live music so you can increase your revenue. You could, you know, upscale your staff and just take your business to the next level. And it sounds like a very simple philosophy, but it was brilliant. It was a brilliant undertaking to do because it really helped the brand survive and get through into like past 2010, 2011. That was quite a challenging time, and I'll never forget that time. Obviously, COVID was very, very difficult. But I think when you're scaling and growing a business, it's constantly difficult because notwithstanding the fact that in the restaurant industry, you're always reinvesting your money because things get tired, things go out of fashion. You know, you're constantly upskilling your staff. You have to be 10 steps ahead of yourself, nearly. Yeah. So you're constantly reinvesting, and it's a low margin business. That always has been very challenging. So what I did, I suppose, between the years of 2010 to up to COVID was just really worked on the financials within the business and how we analyze and strategize each individual restaurant. We also have a catering business. We look at our sales every morning for the day before, and we have sales targets like every company. Mm. But every Wednesday, all our senior team get together and we review our financials for the previous week, how we're looking for the month to date and what we need to do to bring it home to have a good month. It doesn't always work out that way, but it has helped us 100% survive through those really, really dark and challenging times as we came into COVID. So the fact that we set all that up in advance of COVID helped us massively. Yeah. And I'm really proud of that. But look, that's a day-to-day survival kit that any business needs. And you see, financials can actually be very discouraging to people who aren't financially savvy. Because, you know, we spoke at the very beginning, you can't be everything to everybody. Yeah. And you need to surround yourself with people who are strong in your weaker areas. And the finances can turn people off, but they're the number one most important thing in your business. So you have to make sure that you prioritize it.
There's an idea out there, you know, like if you want somebody to act like an owner of a business, you need to make them an owner of a business. But I'm not entirely sure, because I've talked to so many people for whom, you know, it's not about being, you know, when they look at their staff or things like that, it's not about necessarily them being a shareholder in the business. There's something else that makes them feel like an owner, that they've got some sort of a vested emotional capital in the success of the business.
Well, you've got skin in the game.
Yeah.
You know, it's you. Like I always say, my name, Lorraine Heskin, mightn't be on outside the door, but it is, you know, it's there. And ultimately, any decision that's made, good, bad or indifferent, falls on my shoulders and it's my responsibility. And I always have to put my hand up and take responsibility for it. So whereas you're always on edge, you know, but it's yours. Mm. It's 100% yours. And there's a security around that. There's a responsibility around that. And I take that responsibility very seriously as a business owner, that, you know, how I carry myself, how I treat people, you know, how I treat our customers, how I set up our business, how I run our business together with our team. I take all of that really seriously. And I don't take it for granted.
You've started the business from the very from the start. So to a large extent, you've been able to develop the culture within the business, right? So when you look at it and you say to yourself, how would you describe the culture that is Gourmet Food Parlour today, and how has it evolved over it? And, you know, if you were to look to take over another company, what would you be looking for in that company's culture that blends with what you've got?
Mm, that's a brilliant question. So our culture is a culture of respect,
right?
Absolute foundation of respect. And again, I speak about ego, that just because somebody has a business title doesn't mean that they have any, you know, claim over anybody else in the business. And that's important. It is important to have business titles because we need to get jobs done and we need to run departments, but we run it with an absolute element of respect. I like to think that there's a huge element of fun and pride in what we do. You know, I love that things run like clockwork in terms of whatever meetings that we need to have and what we're striving to achieve as a business. I do get I like to step in when I need to, if that's kind of falling offline, because it's important, because sometimes the team can get distracted and that's totally normal. But there's a lot of fun, there's a lot of respect, there's a lot of passion, there's a lot of ambition, and there's a lot of pride for the brand. And I'll go back to, like, that is a consistent message for me, is that people are proud to work for Gourmet Food Parlour. And I think when you combine all of those elements, I think it kind of presents something pretty spectacular for a work environment within our industry.
And then, you know, if you were to look at that target company, what are the one or two things that you'd really need to see in that company in terms of its culture that means it's going to be additive or augment what you've got already?
Well, definitely the structure. Right. I think a company's structure is super important, and to nail it for what that business requires. Because I think when you nail that, you know, everybody is kind of in their own lane, but it's so important to bring everybody together as well. And that's simple philosophy, but can be quite difficult to ascertain. And respect for me, 100%, that it's a positive, respectful work environment, and that people aren't afraid. You know, you don't want someone to walk into a room and be afraid because you're the boss or there's a manager there and they're, you know, only after starting. You want them to feel comfortable. You want them to feel welcome.
Yeah.
You know, when you walk into a room and you know if someone's in a good mood. We all do. You know, if someone's in a good mood or not, if they're upset or if they're happy, if there's something wrong, everybody knows it. Mm. You know, you want to be able to walk into a business and feel that positive energy.
That vibe.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That's important. I always feel that, you know.
Yeah. You know, when you look at businesses, you know, that have been very successful, with that success sometimes comes the risk of distraction. You know, you suddenly, something over there, we could do that as well, and we do that as well. So, you know, or as you get more money, you decide to branch out into things like that. How do you balance that need to grow the business without needing to grow the business down a cul-de-sac or into a hole?
We're a very low margin business. Yeah,
that's one of the main things.
Yeah, you know? Our feet are firmly on the ground. You know what I've really decided? Like, to open up a restaurant, the fit out costs are huge. And to make that back over a period of time is quite, it's no mean feat. Mm. So my interest in fit outs have become very small. So I suppose I'm answering you the opposite way, in that I only want to expand the business where the investment is very low. Mm-hmm. I don't want to overborrow and I don't want to overinvest. I just bought a very small business in Galway about 6 or 7 months ago, small catering business, bought their portfolio of clients. We have a restaurant in Salt Hill in Galway. So now we're after investing in a catering unit in Briar Hill. So we've got our catering division in Dublin and our catering division in Galway. That for me is a very honest and earnest investment. It doesn't put the company at any financial risk. But boy, Aidan, are we ready to expand our amazing catering business to the West. There's a huge opportunity for us down there. You know, we specialised in sports nutrition about 15, 16 years ago. And we work with a lot of elite sports teams. It's a privilege to do it. We absolutely love it. And we want to bring that and our corporate and our private catering to Galway. That for me was a no-brainer investment. I know that I can, you know, I can invest in that. Whereas, you know, if I'm opening a new restaurant, it's going to cost $1 million fit out. I'm just very reluctant to do that anymore. So I'm looking for the landlord to meet me in that and to take that cost. And so I suppose I don't really go down a cul-de-sac because the fear of actually making a decision that's wrong at the detriment of the business has made me never walk down a cul-de-sac, to be honest with you. And I think it's because of the industry that we're in. You can never rest on your laurels. Not even for a second. You just can't.
And then the other thing too about getting bigger and bigger is there's always that risk that the level of service drops, right? And I suppose, particularly with the restaurant industry, there's two kind of things to think about. One, you want the experience to be exactly the same if I walk into any one of your 12, right? But I also don't want it to be, I want it to have its own unique flair depending on the location I am, but still have the same thing. So, you know, How do you try to say, listen, this is the core of what we want the experience to be for the customers, but we also don't want you to be robots that just go out and go, have a nice day, bum, bum, and get through.
Well, that's brilliant, because that's it's so important that even for me with staff, I like to know people's name. Mm. And I like to know when I walk in, we just hired them. How are you getting on? Are you settling in? Are you okay? Mm. I love that. I love hiring local people in all of the restaurants that are from around the communities. But that's really important to me as well, that you're bringing local personality into the business for them working and, you know, dealing with customers who they know. And for the customers coming in as well, I just think it brings a nice connection. I think the connection for me between everything is it comes from the top down. And again, you can go back to all the qualities that people can have, but your customer service training is hugely important. We train all our staff online. So we use a really good online platform called Olive. So our staff can go in their own time and they can learn about what's required, you know, when they start their job, be it if you're just coming in as a waitress on the floor or, you know, you're coming in management, that there's different modules for everybody. And we've tailor-made those modules based on what our culture requires. And it's not just that robotic, you know, yes, you've got to learn your menus and yes, you've got to know about the suppliers and the managers will shadow you and they'll teach you all of that. But you also have to learn how to bring your A game, your personality. You're a salesperson. You got to upsell, you know, and you got to enjoy the journey, you know, get to know customers.
Because it's back to that thing of the customer experience. So they're really the person, like when the customer sits down at the table, right, they're not meeting Lorraine Heskin. They're meeting the person who's serving them.
That's right. That's exactly right. And I think as well, you know, you can take your business to a certain level and have a nice steady growth. And for what I expect within my business for the execution of the quality and the standards, we're growing at a super rate. Yeah, we're growing at a really strong rate that I still very much feel that the heart is there in every single unit. Mm. And like, we have, you know, WhatsApp groups for every single restaurant. Every manager will report in every day and, you know, and they'll post photographs of the food and the staff and how the restaurant looks and all of that. And you get them involved. You get them proud to manage these restaurants. It's like their own little business within the brand. And I think that's extra special as well. And, you know, if somebody's doing something pretty formidable, we'll all come in and go, wow, that's amazing. Well done. Yeah. Amazing.
But also that's then super. It helps the kind of the natural evolution of good ideas, because everybody sees, oh, Johnny's doing such and a thing. Jeez, that might work in the restaurant I'm the manager in.
100%. Yeah. And then getting managers and head chefs together, that's really important. And, you know, and getting them excited. Like, we've got a kitchen at the back of our restaurant in Swords that our executive chef will work in, and he'll bring all the chefs in and then they'll go through their ideas and we'll record videos and come up with, you know, seasonal products. And we just finalised our Christmas menus there about a month ago. So they're recording all the shoot today for the photographs for Christmas and all of that. And it's really important to bring everybody together. And then chefs are going, hey, hi, Michael, how are you? And hi, Robbie, how are you? And, you know, hi, Alex. And what are you doing? And they talk, and it's just bringing people together. You can never underestimate the value of it. It is just, it's priceless. Same with managers, you know, how are you dealing with that? How are you getting on with your rosters? What are your hours like? You know, what are the sales like? How was your Friday night? All of that kind of stuff. What do you do for specials, cocktail specials? Because like, we're a 7 day a week business. Mm. We do breakfast, lunch, brunch, dinner. We don't do dinner 7 nights a week, but some restaurants 5, some 4, some 3. You know, we do takeaway. We have cocktails. We roast our own coffee. We have a catering division. We have a lot of strings to our bow. We have a lot of departments within Gourmet Food Parlour that can bring in different and various revenue streams, which I'm really proud of as well. You know, that the brand has, as I suppose, developed into that over the years. But it's so important that you bring it all together and ultimately make sure that you're always protecting the customer experience. So important.
And what about the whole area of digital? And you, like, I obviously have a lot of conversations with the big restaurant groups in the US and things like that, and this whole move to digital and the app and ordering and all of that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Where are you on that? Because I think when you've created a really special environment in the restaurant, you kind of don't want people just coming in and taking the stuff. And I know it probably suits the people time-wise that that's what they want to do, but you're kind of going, oh, no, stay, come experience. It's more than just the food, if you know what I mean.
Well, I'm glad for the customers to get the food no matter what, to be honest. And, you know, I even think about our Dunshaughlin restaurant, you know, at the weekends, and, you know, that people are treating themselves and they're putting their order in online and they're putting their time to collect and they come in and our managers will go, oh, hey, Lorraine, or hey, Alan, or whatever, Moya, Jamie, there's your order. Enjoy it now and let me know how you get on next time. You know, so you're still creating that energy.
Okay.
We do have deliveries in some of the restaurants, but it's very ad hoc.
Right.
So we don't have a full structured strategy around that yet.
Okay.
But eating habits are changing. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating how much even things have changed this year. I mean, I still say brunch is one of the most popular things, and an early dinner now is becoming one of the most popular aspects of any restaurant. Like, oh, and me, but I'm your sister. Like half five, you know, we just brought back our early bird menu into the restaurants. It includes a really nice glass of wine, but it's a phenomenal menu, great price. But we're just seeing such a huge take up on it. It's unbelievable. But look at, to go back to it, you know, the whole apps, and, you know, you can order online on our website. We don't have an app as yet, but we need to get to that. Mm. That is definitely a strategy for us. We're, as I said to you earlier on, we're looking at a whole CRM system that's going to feed into one. We all need it. All the departments need it. And from that, I want to develop a really strong loyalty system. That's the number one thing for me right now, is a loyalty system for our customers. One thing we've had since day dot is a queue of loyal customers. I mean, I'll never forget during COVID when I had to close, and one of the hardest decisions I've ever made. And I remember customers ringing the next day saying, can I buy a voucher from you? Are you going to reopen? Where's my quesadillas? Where can I get my, you know, my patatas bravas? Mm. And I remember just sitting in the restaurant crying. I was thinking, oh my goodness. Whoo, okay, this is great. Because, you know, when you have to close your whole business down and make everybody, you know, redundant basically overnight, well, you know, let them go. It was a very difficult time. Now, we opened up 5 days later and just, you know, we weren't going to stay closed and open for takeaway and all of that. But it's seeing what people want, you know, it's seeing people want your brand. Yeah. I mean,
The experience. You look at it and you go, oh, those loyalty programs and things like that. What you find is frequency increases and average ticket increases. Mm. Across, and it's strangely enough, but that's what the loyalty ultimately brings, because people kind of think the more I spend, the more I save, because I'm going to get something out of it, and, you know, down the line. And it also gives you a whole load of data that you don't necessarily have before.
100%. And I also think, like, I want our customers to know that we care. This is a way of showing them we care. We care so much about you coming into our restaurants. We care about your experience, and we care about you loving our brand, you know, and our business. And thank you so much. And it's a way of giving it back. And I'm really excited about that. That's a huge project for us right now that we'll be bringing in the next 4 to 6 months. And I can't wait. But look, at online is, people just want to be able to press a button
and go.
They want it delivered at the door. Yeah. They want, like, look at, you know, there's so many businesses now that are delivering to people's doors. They're taking it out, they're cooking their dinner, you know, and off they go. I mean, the world is changing. Yeah. We got to change with it.
Yeah. Customers are great at telling you what's wrong with a product, but not necessarily great at telling you what the solution is, right?
Or they're great at telling you that they didn't enjoy something,
but not so great by telling you that they did.
Mm.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes.
So tell me about customer feedback.
Well, I always give this example of a customer. If I get a review, you know, online, now we analyze our reviews every day, right? Online on every single platform. And we reply and we take on board everything. And, you know, it's really helpful for statistical analysis in terms of there's the same thing cropping up in each restaurant. But if you get a review where a customer will say, you know, been a customer of this restaurant for years, went in last Friday night, had the most horrible experience, I'm never going back. So I think, well, let's just break that down now for a second. So you've loved us for years, but you came in last Friday. Okay, we made a mistake and we put our hands up and we're so sorry about that. But would you not give us the opportunity to explain ourselves? Or was it maybe a new staff, or did something happen, or was there a reason behind it? So I always think, you know, you have to engage with the customers. Like, the customers, you need to talk to them because you can always break it down.
Yeah.
And if we have genuinely made a mistake, we will always say, we are so sorry about that. We did not intend for that to happen. It will never happen again. You know, thank you so much for bringing that to our attention. And we look after the customer and make sure that they're happy at the end of the conversation. But you have to take it all on board. Mm. There's some pinch of salt moments now, you know. You have to just go, well, look at that.
Or bite your tongue.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What's the hardest part of the job as CEO?
I think the part of the job is that it's a lonely job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ultimately, there's only so much that you can talk to the team about. So surrounding myself with fellow business people has been probably one of the best things that I've done in the last 4 to 5 years only. I just think I worked so hard and just kept working that I didn't actually prioritize what I need to do for myself. So the hardest part was just taking all the responsibility all the time and just not being surrounded by people who understood what I was going through maybe or what I do every day. And that's not to say that I'm any better or any different to anybody else. That's not what I'm saying. But it's a different type of responsibility. Yeah. And when I did that, it made a huge and formidable change, you know. That's the hardest. That's the hardest part. You know, been on 24/7, 365 is.
Well,
hard.
The other thing too is, and I always think when you look at CEOs, right? I don't think you necessarily get better at being a CEO, but I think you get faster at making the important decisions. In terms of you filter out the noise and you go, "There's the 10 really important decisions." There's 30 decisions, but you know what? Either somebody else can make those decisions, or they're not really important, you know, but it's that speed of identifying and making the decision. That's a key.
That's so true. That is so true. Like even, you know, somebody asked me the other day, "Do you have decision fatigue?" Imagine. I nearly hugged him. I was like, "Oh my God, I do." You know, I absolutely do. But I have decision fatigue around aspects that I don't feel I should be making decisions over anymore, not about the aspects that I should, you know. So what you've just said is just completely married into that. And I said, I do, but like, you know, you also have to push back on people, you know. What do you think you should do? Is there two solutions to that? Which one would you pick? What do you think? What does your team think? What do you think we should do? You know, and it's empowering people to make decisions as well, too, because I have felt that over the years that people are afraid to make decisions. They're afraid to do the wrong thing. And if they do the wrong thing, they're afraid to get in trouble. So it's also building that into your culture where you're like, OK, well, don't make too many wrong decisions, but it's OK to make a wrong decision because you're going to learn from it. You're never going to do it again. And, you know, it's going to better the environment and the business and all of that. So I think there's a collective mix in there, you know.
And then when it comes to decision making, are you a fast or slow decision maker?
Oh, I am. Anyone who knows me knows I am a very fast decision maker when I absolutely know what to do.
Right.
But I always have to go away and think about things. Okay. I cannot, and I've learned this over the years. If you met me 19 years ago, I'd have given you a completely different answer. But I've learned from over the years, you need to go away and you need to think about things. I need things to settle.
Yeah.
I need things to feel right with me. Because the enormity of that, of a decision, you know, no matter what it is, it has to be right. And people rely on you. You know, they look to you to make the right decision. So I take time for the bigger decisions. But if I know instantly what it is, I'm very confident to do it straight away.
And then when it comes to making your decisions, are you data-based or gut feel?
Oh, gut feel, 100%. Yeah. No,
well,
I do
you're
love
to get loads of more data from now on, so you better start getting
No, I'm gut feel, but I do love data. And I'm like a broken record in the office now, you know. I'm like, where's our stats with that? You know, and where's the statistical analysis for that?
Where's my dashboard? Yeah,
and they're all, you know, I roll up to heaven emoji. But it's very important. Yeah. Like in our business, I mean, information is key. And I mean, it never ceases to amaze me when we run stats reports on, you know, what's our best-selling dish last week, or what was our number one cocktail, or how much wine did we sell last week versus coffee or whatever. It just never ceases to amaze me how it changes by location, changes week to week, changes by season, obviously, for obvious reasons.
With the weather in the season.
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy. So I get addicted to all of that. Yeah. I love all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Do you obsess about the small things then?
I still do.
And you did it to your detriment.
Well, I let it go. I do let it go. You know, I mean, I used to worry so much about the knives and the forks and the napkins that it was to my detriment. But I did let go of it. But what I do now is if I see things that aren't right, I normally just get in and go, "Oh, can we just fix that?" Now I just pass it on to the person who should be managing it, and then they look after it. Proud of myself.
You're progressing.
Yeah.
Who do you seek advice from?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good question. Like so many people, definitely being on the EY Entrepreneur of the Year program was probably one of the most transformational things for me as a person and as an entrepreneur. I've made the greatest of friends and still continue to do so within that group. I'm very, very lucky. And that I've made friends in there for life, and I would definitely speak to a lot of them for advice or talk to them. And you kind of know who to go to. You know people's personalities, not just what kind of business they have, but people's personalities will indicate, you know, well, I could definitely go to them for that.
For that problem, yeah, you know, yeah. Whether
that group of people have that's, it's transformed my experience of being an entrepreneur, and definitely my growth and development for sure.
How do you deal with setbacks?
Setbacks are a positive, to be honest with you, because they make you stop and think, really, was that the right decision? Is that the right course of action? Is that the right way forward? And it's funny, I can give so many examples of it, but there was a particular project that was very high profile, if I had gone through with it, that I was working on over the last 18 months. And there was a lot in my gut that was saying to me, this is right, a lot that wasn't. And then it was going fast forward and it was progressing. But anyway, a curveball came in the way and it really set the project back. And it made me stop and think, OK, hold on a minute now. Why did this come my way? This is not right. Spoke to the team. I'll never make a decision on my own, only with the team and the team only. And when I actually heard what they had to say about the whole project, I mean, it was just fascinating to me, because they didn't really feel it either.
Yeah.
So we were all going forward with the project that we thought was going to transform us, but ultimately none of us felt like it was going to be right. And we pulled out of it, and it was the best decision we ever made. Yeah. So setbacks are positives, you know.
If you use them.
Absolutely. Is it a setback for a reason?
Do you hate losing or love winning?
Well, that's a brilliant question. I hate losing.
Do you?
Yeah. I do. I'm very competitive. I am. Ask my husband and my children. I'm very competitive. Yeah, I hate losing.
Yeah.
Winning, I'd be like, yeah, okay, great. But no, I wouldn't be like, wah, na, 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 na. But I wouldn't like to lose now. Yeah.
So then has fear of failure ever been a driving force for you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Every day. Yeah, absolutely. And not...
Well, does it stop you doing things? The fear of failure?
No, because I'm a great risk taker.
Okay.
But the fear of failure, it's not... personal failure.
Yeah.
So, you know, Dennis O'Brien gave a talk recently that I was at, and he said, you know, I admire people who can walk away from, but know when to walk away from your business. And everybody in that room went, just, you could see them nodding. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People had done it in that room. People know, yeah, I could have walked away several times. Mm-hmm. But I think there is, going back to that gut thing, you know, I believe in the brand and I believe in the business, and I'm very proud of that. But fear of failure, because of the team and the people and everything around it, that keeps me going. Mm. That keeps me having a fear of failure, because I would never want to let anybody down.
Yeah.
Ever.
Could you go back to the shop floor? thinking back to that first restaurant and doing everything on the shop in a restaurant, would you go back?
If I had to, I would. I do for a day. I do for a day. I love meeting customers. Yeah. Like, I just love it. I absolutely love it. And they're the heartbeat of our business, you know. And they're the reason why we're standing where we are. So look at, absolutely. Mm. I wouldn't be great in the till system now.
Would you
not? No, I'm not trained up to that now. Yeah, I'd have to be the food runner, I'd say.
or the bus girl.
Or the meet and greet, the bus girl. Yeah, exactly.
I might trust you with that.
Just about.
What advice would you give young people today? Not just about, say, career advice, life advice, entrepreneur advice. What would you give them, young people today?
Well, I think young people today, you know, I have three kids myself. It's a tough old world that they're growing up in. You know, it's very, everybody's watching, everybody's looking. My advice is stay in your own lane. Be very, very true to yourself. And 100% follow the path of something that you love. Don't do something because you think people think you should do it. Do it because you love it. Find out what you're good at. You know, you might think, oh, I'm destined to be a solicitor. I'm destined to be this. You know, you might hate that. You know, so walk. I always say walk in the shoes of many, many people and different careers and career paths and businesses. And if you want to be an entrepreneur or if you want to have your own career, but just test everything out and try it and find something that you love, because you got to wake up every morning and you got to get out of bed and you got to go do it and you have to love it. Mm-hmm. You deserve to love it, you know.
I agree with you. Have you ever thought of an exit strategy?
I have indeed. I've thought of it. Yeah. And I've thought of it. I don't have any particular plan in place. I still love what I do as much today as I did 19 years ago. I think Gourmet Food Parlour has the best team that it's ever had. Mm-hmm. I think we have the greatest plans for the future, and that's my yeah. goal for the moment.
How do you manage, well, you have a board or investors, but how do you manage them, or how would you manage them if things aren't going well?
So I don't have a board, and I don't have any investors. It's just me.
Right.
It's okay. just me. But again, I surround myself with people who can be my floating board.
Yeah.
And when things are going wrong and things aren't going well, it's really the team around me that's my sounding board, and they're the people who need to get us out of the trenches. But we run the business to not get into a situation where it's going
required.
To be that required. Yeah. I mean, you know, and I talk about it that, you know, it's a very low margin business and we continue to reinvest. And I'm very happy with that for the moment for the business. Very happy with that. So from that perspective, you know, the team are very strong on financials. Mm. I mean, I have a gentleman called Danny Ban. He's with me 14 years and he started as a supervisor in my 25 seater cafe in Dunleary. He's now heading up the whole operations department. And when I tell you that he is the most incredible man, he's so intelligent, he's so committed, he's so passionate about what he does. We are so lucky to have him. His financial way of looking at things has 100% transformed that department, and that's completely down to him and his commitment and dedication. So it is, I know I'm repeating myself a lot, Aidan, and what I'm saying about loyalty and people and surrounding yourself with good people. We have to, I realised years ago that we needed to set up Gourmet Food Parlour to be able to live day to day financially, to not get into a completely worrying state. And then COVID came, but anyway, that was a different story.
What do you think gets more credit for your success, luck or hard work?
Oh, I'd say hard work, just considering the industry that we're in. Yeah.
It's not easy.
I hope so, because it is very hard work. Yeah. It's very hard work. We're very lucky to do what we do, though.
Right. We're going to one of your restaurants tonight, right? There's you and me.
Okay.
And it's a table of six, you, me and four others. And the four people can be your choice. Who would you have at your table?
Oh, no. Wow. This is random.
Yeah.
So I'd love to have David Clifford.
Okay. As a Galway woman, I'm just going to say that.
I know. I admire him so much. I think he's a fantastic athlete and person. The way he carries himself, he's incredible. Alive or dead or both?
It can be either. It
can be anyone. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me think about that now. Oh my goodness, that's a brilliant question. David Clifford. See, I'd be a very sports person now. I'd love to have all sports people.
I can do that too.
Yeah. My God, I'm drawing a blank now. That's terrible. So the two of us and David Clifford, right? Let's move on now from that. Sonia O'Sullivan.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like Sonia to be there. I think she's a great person. Great representative of Ireland. Great athlete. Mm. Very strong. Very strong mind. Let's bring in a comedian along the way so we can have a bit of fun. I think Tommy Tiernan would be great. Mm-hmm. And then I'd love to have somebody like Michael D. Higgins. You know, he's such an intelligent man. He's got so much knowledge.
Cerebral.
And I think his vision of the world and the country, and I think the culture that he has in his personality for Ireland would be really interesting.
Yeah. Well,
there
that's
you
a
go.
Good mix.
There you go.
Yeah. I'll give you one. When I answer, one of the first names that comes up quite regularly is Roy Keane.
Oh, that's a brilliant one. Brilliant one.
For a bit of aggro.
I look at so many. He's so funny. Oh my goodness. That's a great one.
Yeah. What personal characteristics do you think are most important as a CEO?
I think you need to be very strong of mind. Mm-hmm. I think you need to have a very strong decision-making characteristic as a person. I think you have to have a lot of empathy, a lot of belief in yourself, strength of character, and I suppose to eliminate empathy, but to say a lot of emotional intelligence around people and situations. I mean, I think one of the things that I really feel strongly about doing as a CEO is looking at situations. I can see when someone's annoyed. Mm. I can see when someone's not happy. I can see it a mile away. Mm. And I will go to their direct line manager and say, you need to speak to that person. Mm. they're not happy. There's something going on there, be it personal or in business, but we got to figure it out. Because if we don't, and we don't address the elephant in the room, it's going to fester. Yeah. And I've seen that. I've seen situations fester and it's exploded and it causes dramas.
Yeah.
And in the food business, you really don't need that because you need everybody showing up every day doing what they need to do.
Yeah.
It's vitally important. So I think, you know, maintaining that, that I suppose it's just making sure that people are happy. The happiness, yeah, the happiness of your people. That's such an important thing.
But do you think, I get the sense from you, I think you are definitely much better as the CEO of a people business rather than maybe the CEO of, you know, running a factory that has all machines and things like that. Do you have to have the personnel, if you know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely. And notwithstanding the fact that I think, you know, all the jobs that I had up to this, when I worked in Jacobs, for example, you know, I was absolutely fascinated by the factory floor, fascinated by it. I worked for IBM. Yeah. I worked for microelectronics. I worked in production control, production and commodity management. Yeah. I worked in all of that. But it was all people.
Yeah.
We got together at 8 o'clock every morning and we had our first. Yeah. What are we doing with our chips and how are we looking and what are we shipping? But everybody was working together. It was a people environment.
Yeah.
You know, so you're right. I'm very much a people's person. Yeah. I love people. I love seeing happiness and satisfaction in people, from customers to the team around me. But I'm obsessed with the business side of it. And I think that's kind of organically grown over the years as well, Aidan, you know, from starting with a little dream of the 25-seater cafe to what it's become, you know, I mean, that's been a growth and a journey in itself. And I've changed. Mm. I've changed a lot over the years for various different reasons. But it's been wonderful. Mm. And I can't wait to learn and grow into the future.
Great. Well, we've come to the final question time. Now, I don't know what it is, so don't shoot me if it's not good, but we tend to be reasonably lucky in terms of where we are.
Oh,
so let me have
so.
A look.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Right. You're filling out your CAO form today. Give me your 1, 2 and 3 choice for course or college.
Oh, wow. Business studies.
Right.
Business studies. Psychology. Business studies, psychology. What else? Business studies, psychology. Let me think about that. Law.
Law.
Hmm.
No catering, no food sciences, no, nothing like that.
No.
Definitely
no.
Not.
No. No, because you're 17, 18.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, like, there's different things. You know, you grow up over the years, and if someone would say to you, what other industry would you work in? What other job would you do if you couldn't do what you did now?
Yeah.
You know, I because I love people, I love the whole, you know, the mind and how we think and protecting our mind and protecting ourselves and not being too hard on ourselves and our mental health. That's all fascinating. I love all that.
Yeah.
Love all that. But I do business again. Every day of the week. I love it. Yeah. I love it. I love it. Love what it stands for. It's amazing.
Right. Well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I'd just like to thank my guest, Lorraine Heskin. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe or comment if you enjoyed what you heard. Many thanks and we will see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning: the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.